Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele, and I have Kyle with me today.
Hey, everybody. Kyle?
We've got a interesting show for you this afternoon. Some things coming up, some things that have already been done, and I think a tech marvel. Just to be honest with you, because it's something that when I'm going to read some of the article to you, but it's one of those things where you go, wow, they really actually pulled that off. And considering when they pulled it off. So Avatar just continues to amaze. But before that, so we have a movie that just came out. Let's go right into it. No off the tops, no nothing. So we have a movie that just was released last week, and that is Ant-Man and the Wasp. And so, I mean, it's made its money, and it's going to make its money. So, by the way, if you want to go back and watch our spoiler cast, you can go do that. That is here on the channel. So, THR came out with an article today about how this could deliver a cautionary box office win for Marvel Studios. Now you say, cautionary tale? What the hell are they talking about? Well, and yes, it made $120 million opening weekend. So what this, it talks about, and it's a four-day weekend and everything else, but what this talks about is that this movie could just fall off a cliff. And so right now it's got a 47% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is tied for one of the worst in Eternals, which came out last year. Also, it got a B cinema score from audiences, and that's one of the very few titles to do so. And actually broke a streak of 21 movies that actually did that. So they're talking about nearly a 60 to 70% drop for this movie after 1 week. Now, in recent films, okay, of the last five films, none have earned less than a B minus on CinemaScore, which you know is important, and they've all opened to huge numbers. I mean, Doctor Strange opened to 170 million. You had Thor: Love and Thunder open to about 130 million. So it's one of those things where this could really, you could see like a 60 or 70 or even a 75% drop from week one to week two. So let me ask you, Kyle, number one, do you think it's going to drop that much? And number two, what happens if it does?
I think it's very possible that it has a huge second weekend drop. It's especially when any movie opens with a 100+ opening weekend, and then you tend to see the 50 to 60% drop in its future. But I'm still kind of unsure on how it's going to go, because the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is pretty positive. It's about 84% on Rotten Tomatoes in terms of its audience score. And I could still see many people, general movie-going audiences, still enjoying this film. It's not like Babylon, where that movie, it has a very small minority of you know, people that really love it. Like, there's a huge, I think, group of people that will love Quantumania that watch it. It's not the type of movie that when you see, unless you're, you know, maybe expecting something more, but it pretty much gives you what you're expecting to see from it, an Ant-Man story with the Quantum Realm. What was your second question?
So my second question was this. I mean, do you think that it's one of those things where, well, let me ask you this question, just in general. do you think that quantum, or do you think that, I mean, I know this is a stretch and there is some big hype about it, and we're going to be talking about a story in a couple minutes about it. Do you think Cocaine Bear could actually, because of the drop, because of the rating on Rotten Tomatoes, because of the cinema score, do you think it could actually beat Ant-Man?
No. Do you know why? The main reason why is Cocaine Bear's radar. And that is a huge, huge difference in this equation, because I think if Ant-Man drops, you know, a significant amount, what it drops to about 40 million next weekend, I don't see Cocaine Bear making 40, especially given that it's an R-rated, you know, film that has a very niche audience. I mean, you have like a fun audience going to see it, but you can't take the kids to it, of course. I think a lot of older folks won't want to see it regardless. And I feel like what Megan made about 30 million opening weekend.
Yeah, give or take.
Around that
give or match. Take.
So it even Megan didn't make as much. Though I think Megan was rated PG-13.
No. It was R. It was R.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I do want to touch upon a couple things you said earlier, though, because when you look at the numbers for Quantumania and you compare it to, like, say, a Thor: Love and Thunder, a Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Doctor Strange. These are very different situations. In terms of Thor and Black Panther, way more popular characters and IP franchises than the Ant-Man franchise. And with Doctor Strange is, I would say, like an anomaly.
Yeah.
That, because basically what Doctor Strange is it was this multiverse film that had just released after No Way Home, which was a huge box office success. It was marketed in a way to make you think it was a continuation of No Way Home, which it really wasn't. And it starred Scarlet Witch, Wanda Maximoff, the star of the biggest TV show of 2021, which was WandaVision. So there were a lot of things going into Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, that I think boosted it. Where Quantumania, and I've always said this on this channel, and I think you and Tyler both were like doubting me, and you were saying, oh, people are going to see it for Kang. And I never believed that, because Kang is not a pop culture character in any sense. The general movie-going audience does not know who Kang the Conqueror is. They may have seen something on Loki, but even in Loki, he wasn't even called Kang the Conqueror. He was called He Who Remains. There is a big distinction between what the general movie-going audience is going to see and what, you know, hardcore MCU fans are going to see. And I think the thing with Ant-Man is, at the end of the day, the Ant-Man movie, despite it being a film that was connected to the MCU, was a movie that starred many characters that we had seen before in the MCU. It wasn't an MCU film that I think a lot of people were as hyped about, like, say, a Doctor Strange or a Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. And the thing about this movie is, I still think that the numbers it made are actually really good, because you're seeing that it, in terms of Ant-Man openings, it's just gone up and up. So more people are interested in this franchise than ever before. But with this second week drop, this will be very telling on what general movie-going audiences think of this movie. Because, I mean, personal problems aside, though, like, I usually would see an MCU film a second time the week after I see it opening weekend. I still haven't seen Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, for a second time. Now, I kind of do want to see it again, but I'm not rushing out to see it again for a second time like I did with Wakanda Forever, like I did with Doctor Strange, like I did with, heck, even Thor Love and Thunder. And that could be also telling of the film itself. So there's a number of, you know, things to discuss when it comes to this movie. But next weekend will definitely be where we, you know, pay attention. Because I believe Thor Love and Thunder had a 68% second weekend drop. And that was a huge deal because that showed you a lot of people were not happy with that film. But yes, I think the drop will be larger. I don't know, you know, how much you can compare it to other films when I think generally going into it, this film wasn't as, you know, talked about or discussed as a Wakanda Forever or a Multiverse of Madness. So,
yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, I think that when you have a movie like an Ant-Man, couple things. Number one, I think that once you get to a point that people, I mean, we're 15 years, over 30 films into this, people are going to go see the movies regardless. Okay? It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. And I think Marvel's gotten to the point where, and I've said this before, where I think they can just, I would rather see quality over quantity. So instead of, let's say, 10 television series and films together, put out 5, but make it good. That being said, $120 million is really good, considering that, you know, like I said, Doctor Strange made almost 190, which, by the way, almost made $1 billion worldwide. Thor: Love and Thunder made almost $800 million worldwide. I think the drop two is going to be there, right? It's always going to be there. If this drops 50%, they'll be lucky because of the fact that they have, the problems, and we've discussed it here on the channel, and everybody else has too, that this is one of those things that, you know, this really wasn't that good of a film. Okay? It really, really wasn't. But they got away with it. And they're able to get away with it now. So a 60% drop, I could see it. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, to your point, I think Cocaine Bear is going to be fun. It's not going to be... that's what it is. It's a fun movie. It's like a Violent Night, if you will. Okay? It's a fun, violent, you know, violent, bloody, you know, mixture. So, but let me ask you guys, what do you guys think? Do you think that, you know, this it's a significant drop? You know, do you think the significant drop tells you something about Ant-Man and the Wasp? Did you guys go to see Ant-Man and the Wasp? If you did, how many times have you seen it? What format did you see it? When did you see it? Leave your thoughts down in the comments section for us and we'll get back to you. Okay, so our next story, speaking of Cocaine Bear, Cocaine Bear is coming out this week. And I remember seeing the trailer for this the first time and I went, what? Really? They're actually making a movie about this? So anybody who doesn't know about this, this is a movie directed by Elizabeth Banks that is about loosely based, okay? Loosely being in quotes, loosely based on a true story about a bear that ate a shipment of cocaine. And you go, what? How did the bear die? Yeah, it died. So essentially what it happens is it goes on a full bore, unbelievable rage. This is actually Ray Liotta's last performance. before he unfortunately passed away. So basically, the article in THR goes into how they had so much fun bringing the bear to life. And as I said, this is, you know, what it was about. And so they actually nicknamed the bear Cokey. And it was done by Peter Jackson's company, Weta, and which actually did King Kong, Lord of the Rings, Avatar, and a bunch of other films. And they had an absolute blast seeing this. And this stars Kerry Russell. Help me out here. He was in Solo.
Alden Ehrenreich.
Thank you very much. O'Shea Jackson Jr., Margot Martindale, and Jesse Tyler Ferguson. And so this looks like an absolute blast. Number one, what do you think about the movie? And number two, are you going to go see it?
I'll say the same thing that I said when the first trailer dropped. I have absolutely no interest in this film. I could care less. It is a film that I think I have the same amount of interest as many critics on, film critics have towards like MCU films. It's a movie that I just think looks terrible. I don't think it looks good at all. I don't think it looks funny. It just does not look like a good movie. I hope that a lot of people have fun watching it, but this is a movie that I honestly like. I'm sure you've had this, with other movies too, David, but like, it's just a movie that when I see the trailers, I'm like, this is not for me. This, and maybe it's because of the trailers themselves, but it's like, I'm not laughing at this. I don't find this funny. I just find it kind of, you can say, oh, it's stupid, but at the same time, I don't know. Like, it's not a movie for me, and I have no intention on seeing this.
So really, so it's one of those things where it's so whimsical. It's so out there. It's one of those, oh, I can't believe that type of thing. Really? That really happened? And, I get it. I mean, it's so stupid. It's, I won't say funny because it's not funny, but I think this is a film that in 5 or 10 years, this is going to be one of those movies that everybody's going to look back on and go, you remember that movie Cocaine Bear? I think it's going to become a cult classic. I really, really do. And I think it's going to be, awesome. I mean, right now in the time, I don't think, I don't think it's going to do that well. I'll be honest with you. I agree with you. I mean, it's not going to, it's R-rated. It's, not the best cast in the world. The story's iffy at best. It's so out there. It's like, they really actually made this movie.
I'm surprised you said that Weta worked on the VFX on this.
Yeah,
bear.
They actually did. They actually did the effects for Cokie, the bear.
I was watching the trailers. I thought the effects were pretty poor. So maybe they've just been, they've spent their time working on Avatar. I don't know. But like, wow. I was shocked to hear that because they looked, in my opinion, they look quite cheap. Like they didn't, maybe it's just because it's this bear doing these things. And I know that, it's not real, but it just, to me, I don't know. I've seen some social media reactions that have been positive, but they're holding the review embargo until the day the movie releases.
Oh yeah, well I mean that's always a problem.
I mean, this isn't a film that
though, you have to be open-minded. You have to be open-minded when you what I mean is
but like, this isn't a movie that would have been, nominated for Oscars or such.
No,
it's a movie that really, if you look at a lot of comedies, a lot of like infamous comedies, especially when they come out, I believe like a Step Brothers, for instance, it might get terrible reviews, but at the end of the day, then it becomes a classic. And mm-hmm. I think there are a number of comedies out there that a lot of people really love that when they came out. So reviews for this movie don't really matter. I just personally don't think it looks good, nor do I want to see it, yeah, which is rare. Like usually, like if I see a movie, like I am open to giving films a chance, but for some reason, like Cocaine Bear, every time I see the trailers, I would rather watch. No, I'm not going to say it.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I mean,
go ahead.
Would I rather watch Jurassic World Dominion? That's a question I have to ask myself when I see the trailers.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, this is a one-off, right? This is a one-off, and it's one of those things where, you know, they're never going to make a sequel, and, you know, Jurassic World is, you know, dinosaurs, and I mean, yeah, so I get it. As far as it, I mean, you have to go into this kind of movie with an open mind. You have to go into this thinking, okay, this isn't going to make that much money.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's like I said earlier, you got to, you know, view it like a Violent Night type of thing, you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, it's so out there, it's so crazy that, okay. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, if nothing else, I'd go I'll be honest, I'm intrigued. I am intrigued. I absolutely do want to go see it. I know going in, this isn't going to be anything big, but I'm intrigued.
I think if I remember, when I first heard about the project, it was intriguing to me. I think that might have been like, I was like, ooh, I was intrigued by it. But then when I actually saw the trailers, that's the power of like trailers themselves.
Oh, well, they're marketing.
If you watch a trailer, it's the trailer's job to get you excited about the film. Yeah. And I, in my opinion, because it didn't, it failed to get me excited. So,
The first one is, you know, the first one's just to introduce you to it. The second one, the second trailer is basically to get you a little more hype for it.
Is there ever a second trailer for this movie?
I don't know. I don't think so. By the way, that's smart. Actually. You know, that's a smart movie. Yeah. But, yeah, so what do you guys think? Are you looking forward to Cocaine Bear this weekend? Are you going to go see Cocaine Bear this weekend? You know, can you compare it to any other whimsical, crazy, out there movies you've seen recently? Leave your thoughts down in the comments. I'm dying to hear what you guys have to think about this. Okay. So let's move on. So here's a little movie that came out in December of last year. It did okay, I guess. And it was an amazing movie. Kyle, you've gone to see this how many times?
77. No, okay.
I wouldn't doubt it. So that's where Cameron's getting all the money.
I've seen it. I've seen it, well, really four times in its entirety. I think a fifth time I was going from theater to theater, but it was really four times watched it.
So four times.
Yes.
So this is, and by the way, guys, you can go back and watch our spoiler cast about it. It was unbelievable. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, I saw it in 3D. Unbelievable movie visually. I mean, there's a couple of no-brainers here at the Oscars. If this doesn't win visual effects at the Oscars, there needs to be an investigation. But I'm going to read you this article from THR, and this I saw this morning and it blew me away. So this is behind the screen. This is going to get a little techie and nerdy for those people that like this stuff. So the headline reads, Avatar The Way of Water team race to create 1,065 delivery versions for theaters. So, the Herculean effort to make James Cameron's groundbreaking Avatar The Way of Water and deliver the movie to theaters around the world for its December 16 day-and-date release was the subject of a day-long series of panels presentations Tuesday at the HPA, the Hollywood Professionals Association Tech Retreat. A sold-out crowd of 750 tech leaders, developers, and suppliers got a look at the unprecedented initiative to deliver the movie to theaters undertaken by Disney, 20th Century Studios, Cameron, and producer John Landau's Lightstorm Entertainment and their suppliers. With digital cinema, theaters vary greatly in their screening capabilities, and Cameron and Landau were bullish about delivering the best possible experience to each individual theater. In the case of Avatar: The Way of Water, this involved the creation of a whopping 1,065 unique delivery versions of the movie.
Wow.
The unheard of number of deliverables include combinations of 2D, 3D, HDR, and 4K. Very light levels, aspect ratios, a high frame rate of 48 frames per second, and range of audio formats, 51 languages supported with subtitles, and 28 languages supported by dubbing. For subcontents, the typical Marvel tentpole, take Ant-Man and the Wasp, for example, involved roughly 500 deliverables, which is already a very high number. So that essentially means they put out twice as many in that time. So which is very unknown. So Kim Baxter, Beresford, VP Integrated Planning and Motion Pictures Operation at Walt Disney Studios, explained that in order to meet the delivery date, the movie was was effectively divided into 15 reels, allowing the team to begin creating development delivery elements before the 3 hour and 12 minute movie was locked in. Roughly 800 versions of the movie were QC quality controlled in the final 5 days of release. We didn't have the movie together until about 16 days before the release.
Wow.
We moved reel by reel because we couldn't wait, she said. In all, she reported that this meant they was creating 6,338 portions of DCP, digital cinema packaging, which is the equivalent of a film print. We turned our operation into a 24/7 support model, said the VP, Mark Arenz. And then basically it gets a little more techie and goes on to say, you know, that they wanted a 3D and 48 frames per second home release, which they're working on. And then it goes into all the tech stuff about the cameras and everything else that was done. So let me ask you this question. When you hear this, when you hear what they did and how they did it, what is that? I don't know if you're a big behind the scenes guy, but what does that mean to like getting that out and doing those kind of numbers?
Well, it makes you just really appreciate the work even more, and not just the film that you're watching, but the people that worked on it, because a movie is made up of hundreds, thousands of, you know, people working on the film. And as we've seen, in fact, a article that was released today on Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania detailed on the visual effects on that film and how that worked out. You start to see sometimes, or a lot of the times in the case of the VFX industry, their work and the value of those workers gets overlooked. Those workers aren't sometimes what you would expect the focus should be placed on. I mean, you're talking about people that are literally contributing to the way the film looks. And they, like, you have the director, you have the actors, but if they don't get their job done, then the film isn't going to look as good as the director, the producers, anyone wants it to. And I always find it interesting when they announced when they finished the film, and to say that this film was finished 16 days before it was released, which means it was finished, I would assume, either the very last day of November or maybe in December. It was literally finished the month that the movie was released. You're talking about a film that, when people were buying tickets, wasn't finished yet. You're talking about a film that, you know, when they release trailers, these films aren't finished yet. And a lot of times, like, it's movies like this, these big VFX heavy films, that really I just look at and I say to myself, oh my God, how much, you know, work is put into it. That's why, like, I'm not saying that one film is more important than the other, but a lot of the awards consideration, you have to look at Avatar, because the amount of work put into that film is just insane.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things where, I mean, I remember seeing it in 3D.
Yeah.
And I just went, oh my God. I mean, it just pops. And just, it's one of those things where you go, this is visual effects. This is,
yes.
I mean, even with motion capture today,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we're, you know, one of the big things, you know, and this is why, you know, I mean, you take a game like The Last of Us, which use, you know, motion capture, and this is the same thing. And we're not even talking. We're not even talking about the underwater scenes. I mean, that itself is unbelievable. I mean, what he did and how he did it and cap. I mean, I think it was you that told me Kate Winslet holds the record for being able to hold her breath for 9 minutes.
9 minutes.
I mean, Tom Cruise only did it for 7 in when he jumped in the thing. I mean,
and it was the same guy. The same guy that helped Tom Cruise learn how to do that was the same guy that helped Kate learn how to do it. So
yeah.
You're talking about
it's just this movie. And I know, I mean, we haven't gushed about it in a while, but my God, when you hear these statistics, like, they created 1,065 prints for, I mean, for 2D, 3D, HDR, 4K, and then the range of audio formats, 51 languages, which is not with subtitles. That's not easy, guys. And 28 supported by dubbing. I mean,
I remember when the first Avatar was released, they actually had an interesting technique where they went into every theater. I don't even know how accurate this was, but they said they went to all the theaters that were showing the film to make sure that their equipment was in check, that their audio system was in check. And that was something that they wanted to make sure that any theater you go to see Avatar, this was back in 2009, any theater you go to, you're getting the best possible experience, audio quality-wise, screen-wise. And I don't know if they did that for this one, but, I mean...
Oh, I'm sure they did. And I'm sure they look, if they QC'd all of the prints and did it that, you know, that way, you know that they were really, really, really meticulous about everything and cutting it, and you know they were 10 times as meticulous as they were back in 09.
I want to ask you this question, David, because I mean, this is a bit, it's related to it, but it interests me because, I mean, I guess it's the same thing when it comes to like an Avengers Endgame, Infinity War, but it just seems to me when I'm looking at December releases, it's gotten to a point lately where we're seeing films like a Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Spider-Man No Way Home, this, where they're releasing these big movies, Aquaman.
And we're not December. Even, we'll do a story about Aquaman and the screenings about that probably another time, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, do you think that, like, I guess the studios now, they realize how much money a movie can make in that time period, and they're like, let's release our biggest movie at this time.
Well, okay. So to answer your question, I think it's this. I think it's the holidays. I think they realize that it's, you know, November and December is the holidays. And so when you're able to get a Wakanda Forever or a Black Panther or whatever it is, when you're able to do that, okay, and actually make money. Now, Grant, to truth be told, I don't think anybody knew how big, you know, that was going to be. But to your point, take a look at Star Wars, Force Awakens, for example.
Yes.
That was a tentpole movie. It was the first movie that had been released since Revenge of the Sith. Okay, so you're talking about over a 10-year window. And it was brand new.
Mm-hmm.
In the grand scheme of things, right? It was not the start. It was not the Skywalker saga. And you couple that with holidays, and you couple that with the buzz, and you couple that with the temp. It's one of those things where, you know, now with an Aquaman, it's a little different, okay? Because Aquaman is, yeah, it's DC, and yeah, it's comic book, but it's not one of those,
yeah,
trendy, if you will, Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman. And it's, you know, I think people were looking forward to the movie. And so I get what you're saying. And Spider-Man No Way Home, too. I mean, you know, all you got to do is build off that we were talking about Ant-Man earlier. You can only really compare Spider-Man movies from John Watts to one another. It's got to be apples to apples.
Yeah.
You can't take some MCU project and compare it to Spider-Man No Way Home. You just can't. It has to be apples to apples. So let's say, you know, we were talking about the drop for Ant-Man earlier. You got to look at the drop of that Ant-Man, the last Ant-Man and the Wasp, to this drop of Ant-Man and the Wasp. So when you say, okay, well, it dropped this much or that much, you go, oh, okay, I understand why. So December, and it's the other thing too. It's right around the corner. It's a brand new year. It's, you know, all this stuff. So I think people, they want to normally hit the ground running. It's essentially they want to hit the ground running for next year. That's what it is. They start out big and they end big. So, I mean, but this, so that's why I think, and, you know, we've got another couple of big movies coming out in November. You know, yeah. I mean, the Marvels just moved to November. I was reading a piece in The Wrap today. You're going to have two Disney movies competing against each other. Okay? And this is the third time that this has happened, and they've grossed a lot of money. So that's going to be fascinating to see. But getting back to Avatar, this is just one of those movies that is just, it's a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal movie. I can understand why this has made so much. And by the way, it's not just overseas. It's here domestic.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's made an insane amount of money here in the States. And the other thing I'll say to your point is this. I think it depends on what else is out, right? If you have nothing else to compete with, then you're going to blow up every day. So you're going to have a run until, I mean, a perfect example of that is, until you had Avatar The Way of Water come out in December, everybody was looking forward to February because there was really nothing in January to stop it. And it had legs and it just kept going and going and going and going. I mean, hell, you know, about a month ago, it even went up, 6%? How many films do you know go up after the fourth or fifth week in release? It doesn't happen.
It makes you look at Quantumania. And you have to, like, wonder, what's the difference between a Quantumania and an Avatar? Because...
Story.
That's hands a good down, one. That's...
No doubt in my mind. It all starts with the story. Because if you
and
don't
also
have...
the visuals. I would say the visuals.
Well, the visuals... But here's the thing. The visuals were a no-brainer. You were going to see Avatar first and foremost for the visuals. The story was secondary. You wanted to see more of the story, sure, but it was the visuals. Because the wait had been so long, you're like, this better blow my socks off.
Yeah.
But to your point, if you don't have a story, if you don't have stakes, if it's not compelling, and if I don't care, I checked out. Now, I can suspend disbelief to a certain extent, but... at some point, I'm going to check out. And if that story's not there, so that's what I would say. And James Cameron, and we've discussed this many times before, he is one of the best storytellers of all time. Whether it is a Titanic, whether it is a Terminator 2, whether it is an Aliens, whatever it is, He is one of the best storytellers of all time. So I think that's the difference.
And also, because, like, if you look at Ant-Man, Ant-Man also deals with a family. But the thing is, and you hate to say it, but you care more about the family in Avatar than you care about the family in...
That's not to say Catherine Newton wasn't good. She was okay. But some, I mean, you know, you go on Twitter now and you know, half that stuff's memes. Whether it's MODOK or, you know, some of the script writing and whatever else, it's like, really? Try not to be a dick? I mean, who thinks it's like that scene? one of the greatest scenes, and I still don't know how it actually got filmed. One of the greatest scenes of all time is the end of Venom. When he walks into the convenience store and he, you know, no shit.
I did not, no shit. Dude, I did not expect you to say that.
And so he walks in and he's, you know, chocolate and tater tots and whatever else. And then what ends up happening, you know, she's getting robbed. And it's like, you know, the whole line of the fart in the wind. How does that actually get put on film? How? That's what I mean. My point is this. You take a look at that, and you take a look at something like Don't Be a Dick, and you go, oh my God. How does this happen? And yet, because it's Marvel. Because it's Marvel. And that's the only thing I can think of. Because it's Marvel. And because 5, 6, 7 years ago, we're going to look back at this, at that scene, in this, you know, especially that scene, and we're going to be laughing about it 5, 6, 7 years from now. Go, they could never write this down. So, anyways, guys, Avatar, it's just an amazing movie. And so when you, I know we kind of got off the course there, but once you hear how they were able to put it together, and they only they're still putting it together 16 days out, just incredible. What did you guys think of? I know I've asked you this before, and I want more of your feedback. What did you think about Avatar, The Way of Water? Did you think that, you know, do you like it? Obviously you do, because you went back to see it multiple times. But seriously, what do you think about them being able to put it all together like that, in the formats, in the dubbing, in the audio? Do you appreciate it more now that you see that on screen? How many times have you guys gone to see Avatar? In what formats? Would you go back and see it again? Leave your thoughts down in the comments. Okay. So we're going to get to the last story of the day. And today's last story is about a series on HBO Max that came out last year. And that was House of the Dragon. And House of the Dragon... Everybody was looking forward to this series because for a couple reasons. Number one is Game of Thrones. Number two, as far as a Game of Thrones fan, anything could have been better than what they put out for the last season. Anything. And so I think that when you hear any little breadcrumb about House of the Dragon now, you're all over it. You're jumping all over it because you can't wait. House of the Dragon is one of those series that HBO hit a home run with. And so this is one of those things where they absolutely want to get the second season out. So this comes from, and we just got some news on this. So this comes from Variety. And so it says, there'll be no dragons before its time. With production of season 2 of the Game of Thrones prequel, House of the Dragon, just underway, HBO and HBO Max content CEO Casey Bowles confirmed that sometime in 2024, quote, is a good guess, end quote, for the hit series to return, although he's mum on the exact time of year. But here's a hint. Boyle said it's a, quote, good guess, end quote, that the show won't be eligible for the 2024 Emmy season, which ends its eligibility period May 31st, 2024. So you're expected to see it in the summer of 2024. And so he goes on to say, my philosophy is a good script is priority number one. I'm not doing this based on what I having one to have one a year or 2 a year. I want it to be based on the scripts we're excited about. So he goes on to say that, remember to get House of the Dragon follow-ups from Game of Thrones. We've developed a lot of shows. Shot a pilot, a bunch of scripts, and we got House of the Dragon. To do that again is going to take the same amount of effort. You have to develop a lot of things. Try things. You never know what's going to work. So currently, we're doing that. I'm not opposed to any number of shows. There's probably a natural limit to how many fans want, but I'm open to as long as any we feel that the scripts are really good about the good, about good, about the scripts and the prospects for a series. It's going to take a while that one that hits a mark. I know that George R.R. Martin feels the same way. You want to do one everybody's really proud and excited about. So, I mean, this is one of those franchises that has been on HBO and HBO Max for many, 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 many years. Okay. We're talking about, you know, this ran 7, 8, 9 years. I mean, really, when you're talking about shooting and everything else, almost 15 years. And the ratings, while the ratings were through the roof for the last season, because it was the last season, it wasn't the best. All that being said, so let me, I know you're kind of a fan of this, Kyle. Let me ask you, what did you, and I, truth be told, guys, I have not watched House of the Dragon. I got through 2 episodes and I just stopped watching. Not because I didn't like it. I just, other things to do. So let me ask you, Kyle. Number one, are you excited about the news that we might see a summer 2024 release? And number two, do you think it's going to be better than the first season?
So as a massive fan of House of the Dragon season one, I cannot wait for season two. I thought House of the Dragon was the best show. There's like no contest. It was the best show of 2022. And I will say that I'm a little bit worried about season two. And I don't know if you're aware of this, David, but the showrunner left this show.
Right. The
co-showrunner left this show. Miguel Sapochnik, who is actually largely responsible for a lot of elements of season one. One of them being the original idea for this series was that it would focus on the king and the prince. So King Viserys and Prince Daemon. And they have this relationship in the series where they are very much the brothers, but they feel, you know, very much like sometimes you don't know whether they are best friends or sometimes you don't know whether they aren't. And what happened was Miguel Sapochnik's wife actually suggested, you know what, instead of focusing it on Daemon and Viserys, why don't we focus on Rhaenyra and Alicent? That is a major reason why this show is as good as it is. The relationship between Rhaenyra and Alicent was outstanding. And I think Miguel leaving this show worries me a little, because Ryan J. Condal, who does the show, he did a wonderful, magnificent job on it, and he wrote a number of things, and he was great. But how does, you know, a ship run without, or no, how does a plane fly without its co-pilot? Or, I mean, I could say, I think.
I know the analogy you're trying to get at.
It's like, I'm very curious to see what they do, and I hope they maintain the same level of quality. They certainly will when it comes to the performances, but I don't know. So I'm really looking forward to it. The one thing I am a little bit saddened about, because I understand, you know, with flashback, with the way that they told the story, They're going to continue with Emma Darcy and Olivia Cooke in the future of the seasons. But I really love Millie Alcock and Emily Carey as young Rhaenyra and young Alicent. And I am hoping, you know, some way, somehow, they are either incorporated in this season again, where we maybe get flashbacks, or, and this is my crazy idea, and I wish I could go up to the head of HBO and pitch it to them, they do another show where it takes place in between the years that we don't see.
Yeah, a filler season, so to speak.
Yeah, and it focuses on those characters because, listen, I love Emma Darcy and I love Olivia Cooke, but this show, season one of House of the Dragon, is as much, you know, Millie Alcock's and Emily Carey's as it is Emma and Olivia's. Even if you look at it, Millie was in even more episodes than Emma was. And I think Emma is amazing. And I cannot wait to see what they do in season two. But, man, I want to see more of Millie and Emily. So I don't know how they would do it. I think there was a rumor that they might still be a part of it. But that's something I'm very curious about. So, I mean, I'm still really excited. There's a lot of great stories that are going to continue based on the book that it's based off of. And we'll probably get 2-3 more seasons out of this. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's also a long wait, too, because, like, when it comes to television, it used to be, you know, you'd get technically 2 seasons in a year. Not 2 full seasons, but you'd get the end of one season at the beginning of the year and the beginning of the other at the end of the year. That's how TV used to work. Mm-hmm. But now you have to wait about 2 years for the show to return. And I mean, some people aren't going to be too happy about that because they're going to be like, wait, where's the show? Even Game of Thrones, it would only be about a year wait. Then the final season took about 2 years. But it was funny because when the final season of Game of Thrones took about 2 years to make, everyone was like, oh my goodness, this is going to take forever. We can't wait that long. And now that's become like the
they jumped on it as soon as it happened.
Yeah, that's the traditional wait now for television. Mm-hmm. Shows take like 2 years to come out because they shoot these shows kind of like movies at this point where they're making a movie and then it takes about 2 years. That's what happened to Westworld. Westworld was a show. I think what should have happened Westworld is if they shot it much closer, they could have finished the series. But because it took them so long between each season to tell each storyline, it ended up where the show is now canceled because they didn't want to spend another bucket load of cash to make the next season. So, yeah, I'm so excited for it, though, because it is my favorite show. And I cannot wait to see these characters and these actors come back because they took the world by storm. And that was something that a lot of people did not expect to see when, you know, House of the Dragon started.
These characters are
like Game of Thrones levels of popularity. And that's, when it comes to prequels, that's not an easy thing to accomplish.
So we are going to be doing a Heat. We're going to be recording Heat for our Perfect Movies in March. And then next week, we're going to do actually a week prior to that, we're going to be doing Creed. Mm-hmm. We're going to be doing all the Creed movies, the first one, the second one, and then on March 4th, we're both going to go see Creed 3. We're going to come back here for the channel on March 4th. And that's a Saturday, guys. I'm going to do the Creed 3 spoiler cast. And then don't forget on the 5th, guys. Come back here on the 5th. We have The Last of Us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be fun. And then and you're going to be looking forward to a number of great spoiler casts and every series. So March 1st, don't forget, we got The Mandalorian starting. We are going to be doing Mandalorian spoiler cast. I've got to catch up in the first 2 seasons. So you're going to be getting that. The first couple weeks of March are going to be crazy. And yeah, and then, you know, May is Guardians, June 2nd is Across the Spider-Verse, which I've got to see the first one. We've got June 9th is Transformers, the 16th is The Flash, the end of the month, the 30th is Indiana Jones. So I believe it's the same day it comes out, Oppenheimer and Barbie come out the same day. And then we've got Mission Impossible. And then, of course, one that you are looking forward to is it's coming out on Netflix, I think you were telling me, right? That the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie is coming out?
No, I think it's actually going to be a live-action theatrical film.
Oh, really?
No, okay. not live-action, animated
theatrical. Right. So that's coming out in August. We got a ton of stuff for the rest of the year, guys. Okay. So thank you very much. And thank you, Coco, for that. And guys, if you stop by for a couple of minutes, hit that like and hit that subscribe button, because this is the only way it's going to get out, and we want it to
share. Everybody, let people know that this channel exists.
Exactly. Okay. I can't wait for this. I cannot wait to see what's coming up, and we're gonna have. And by the way, guys, you can follow him on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. And we're always doing spaces. So please feel free to pop in. There's the handles. Feel free to pop into any of our spaces. Say hello. And
Spaces on Twitter. Twitter is where you find them.
Yeah. And we're doing, we got a bunch of stuff. Okay, guys. So thank you very much. Do the three things you need to do. Be safe. Be careful. And take care of yourself. He's Kyle, I'm David, and you have been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye-bye.